It's been 20 years since women leaders in the world gathered in Beijing, China, to hammer out a Universal Declaration of Women's Rights.
We must elect more women. Yes. I mean, we're only 10% in the parliaments of the world.
There's the voice of a leader from the United States, no longer with us, feminist congresswoman and New York legend Bella Abzug. Pakistan's Benazir Bhutto was a voice for gender equality back then. She was assassinated in 2007. Today, this woman is a presidential candidate and former U.S. Secretary of State. But 20 years ago, she held the ceremonial title of First Lady to President Bill Clinton. But that didn't stop Hillary Clinton from making a very famous speech in Beijing.
I believe that now, on the eve of a new millennium, it is time to break the silence. It is time for us to say here in Beijing, and for the world to hear, that it is no longer acceptable to discuss women's rights as separate from human rights.
20 years ago, Samantha Power was a 24-year-old journalist who had developed a jaded view of the ability of nations to protect human rights, male or female. She had just returned from Sarajevo covering the Bosnian War, observing firsthand the effects of genocide. Today, Samantha Power is the United States Ambassador to the United Nations, serving President Barack Obama. Under Ambassador Power, the U.S. mission to the U.N. is remembering the 20th anniversary of the Beijing conference with an exhibit called Free the 20. Ambassador Power showed us the photographic display that features 20 women, political prisoners, detained around the world.
Every day we have all the diplomats of the world entering the building across the street, which is the United Nations. There's the Security Council, which we can see from here, and the back of the General Assembly. And most of the time, as they, you know, march down the street, they're looking at their Blackberries, or on a good day, they're looking at the flags and thinking about the majesty and possibility for world peace. But what they're often not doing is thinking about individuals. And so what we decided to do is just, instead of just launching a campaign called Free the 20, we decided to take advantage of this wide open space that we have here, a large facade to the U.S. mission, and to actually hang the portraits of the 20 women one by one as we profiled them, so that diplomats from these countries, you know, would see that this was something we were taking very seriously. We're using the premises of the U.S. mission like this for the first time.
Beyond the diplomats, what if a young girl came by and happened to ask you, why are these pictures up here? What would you tell her?
Well, I'm trying to have that conversation with my daughter, who's maybe a little young for it right now. But, these are the heroes of our time. We have a way of, thinking about people like Nelson Mandela or Václav Havel. But there are women in the here and now who are risking everything and who are not able to be with their sons and daughters or with their parents because they stood up for what they believed in, because it mattered more to them to try to improve their communities than to look out for themselves. And that's a pretty amazing message for young girls in this country and young girls in any country to hear. And I also, it matters a great deal to me that these women and their families know that America hasn't forgotten about them and that they're on our minds, and that we are going to continue to raise these cases for as long as they are languishing in prison.
To see pictures of the Free the 20 campaign, head over to thetakeaway.org. And we'll hear more of my conversation with Ambassador Power later this hour. On a spectacular summer day on the busy streets across from the United Nations headquarters in New York City, Samantha Power, U.S. Ambassador to the United Nations, is one of the most powerful women in the Obama administration. And she herself is a sign of progress in addressing gender equality and giving women more of a role in political leadership around the world. Seeking equality and leadership for women was the global mission of the Beijing Conference 20 years ago. Under the auspices of the United Nations, a human rights declaration for women was outlined in a set of goals that challenged morality, sexual norms, and some deeply held traditions in many cultures. Today, those issues of human rights being tested most urgently involve the fate of millions of refugees leaving the Middle East and Africa, bound for Europe and even the United States. Whose responsibility is it to safeguard the rights of these people, most of whom are women and children? Ambassador Samantha Power spoke with us in a wide-ranging conversation that addressed the strengths and weaknesses of the United Nations 20 years after the 1995 Beijing conference.
When I think about the privileged positions that we get to occupy here in this country, and then contrast doing that in a society like this one with any one of these societies in which these women are taking these risks, I mean, it's unbelievable. We have one woman here on the list, Gao Yu, who was arrested back in 1989 in the Tiananmen Square protests, spent a year in prison, and then 25 years later, around the anniversary of Tiananmen, gathered with a bunch of activists to think about how they were going to commemorate it, and then was arrested again. And she's one of the women that we're profiling. And in the intervening 25 years, she continued to write and speak out, even knowing what the consequences would be for her and for her family.
It's Beijing plus 20. Has China made progress on this front and others, particularly in the advocacy that this woman you just spoke of is crying out for?
Well, China will be hosting this conference. President Xi is coming to the General Assembly for the first time, and also, as you know, will be coming to Washington. Human rights is going to be a very big topic in his meeting with President Obama. There's an amazing story to tell about Chinese development and the development of men and women alike in terms of economic empowerment. But it's a very difficult time right now because the government is cracking down in quite dramatic ways against NGOs. And we're living in a year, just in the run-up to this Beijing Plus 20 conference, where women who advocated against sexual harassment and on behalf of women's rights themselves were locked up.
We're speaking on a hustling, bustling, beautiful summer day here in New York, right outside the United Nations. And to think broadly about the world, UNICEF and the High Commission says that there are 60 million displaced persons in the world because of conflict, and most of them are women and children. How does Beijing Plus 20 address the faces of those refugees and migrants who are so much in the news right now?
Well, I think what you'll see at the coming General Assembly, which is the 70th anniversary of the United Nations, and you'll see a lot of angst, I think, about the United Nations, some celebration of some recent advances, and a kind of schizophrenia, really, about whether we have the tools and have mobilized the resources to get the job done in 2015. So on the one hand, you have a remarkable success story on Ebola. We have the Iran deal, which is an emblem of the Security Council coming together, putting in place tough sanctions, and then us going to the negotiating table and securing the terms we need to dismantle Iran's nuclear program. And then on the other, you have these scenes, almost biblical scenes, of people being displaced. So we have our work cut out for us right now. The needs of these desperate families are far outpacing what governments have been able to mobilize. To take Syria as an example, the United States has given $4.1 billion. It's an enormous amount of money and resources and a symptom of the generosity of the American people. And yet we're only scratching the surface.
Since you mentioned Syria, John Kerry's predecessor as Secretary of State, or one of his predecessors as Secretary of State, he said, if you break it, you own it. Is it a fair argument to say that many of the faces coming out of the Middle East, in Iraq and Syria, are owned by some of the missteps of the United States in 2003, and that we need to accept that ownership and maybe even go beyond the 10,000 refugees that the administration said we will welcome to the United States this week?
The United States got a very slow start in admitting Iraqi refugees in the wake of the Iraq War, when there was the first wave of massive displacement into the neighboring countries. And in the tail end of the Bush administration and the beginning of the Obama administration, again, credit to the American people, we have opened our doors to Iraqi refugees and managed over time to dramatically increase the numbers that are coming here. On Syria, the numbers are quite modest given the needs. And President Obama has been very clear that, again, this General Assembly, we need to use this occasion to see if we can sort of mobilize a means of sharing what is a burden that no one country, even a country as large and often as generous as the United States, a burden that we alone aren't going to be able to bear. So it's going to have to be comprehensive, and there's no question that, I mean, it's almost impossible to find words to convey how urgent it is to bring more hands on deck. And a year from now, we need to look back and see that we've done a much better job catering to the needs of these innocent families who wanted nothing more than to have rights and you know, see their dignity respected, and have been greeted, unfortunately, by Assad with barrel bombs and gas, and by ISIL, again, with a kind of brutality that, you know, is unspeakable.
You've observed the UN at a particularly interesting moment.
That's one way to put it.
When I grew up in high school,
we were always taught that the Security Council was kind of the main event and everything else was sort of window dressing. Mm-hmm. Certainly it was important. UNICEF was something you did at Halloween. And as I began my journalism career, Security Council really was the main event news-wise, and things like the Millennium Development Goals seemed certainly very well-intentioned, but not the big headline. It's almost as though that's reversed, because the successes on the humanitarian side in some ways underscore just how frustrated the Security Council has been in conflict resolution. What's your feeling on that?
Well, I think it's a profound point you make. I would say that there is a recognition of the interlinkages across the development, the human rights, and the security and conflict resolution space. I mean, if you take climate change, a catastrophic occurrence in its own right because of what it is doing to nature, but if you look at it in the context of scarcity and desertification and see how much of a factor it's becoming also in shrinking resources, which in turn are giving rise to conflict, you'll see that what we do in the Security Council is ever more linked with the humanitarian and the development issues being addressed elsewhere in the UN system. So I think intellectually and normatively, people have made progress and they've started to bring these strands together, recognizing that there's only so much. You can send 130,000 peacekeepers out into harm's way, but they're there to kind of put the finger in the dike until somebody figures out how to deal with the root causes of conflict, you know, and brings a political settlement to bear. And political settlements themselves are rooted in resources and competition for resources and territory and so forth. So, everything is related to everything else, but resourcing the solutions and ending a kind of free rider problem that also persists at an organization like this one. So changing the incentive structures so that countries are prepared to invest here in those solutions, that's the next phase of this, now that we've got the intellectual understanding that everything's related to everything else.
Ambassador Power, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Samantha Power is the U.S. Ambassador to the United Nations. To see the faces of the 20 women political prisoners in the Free the 20 campaign, just go to thetakeaway.org. That's all for today. Thanks so much for listening. I'm John Hockenberry. This is The Takeaway.